Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. A book tells stories of despair and of hope for street children in Tanzania. Father Jim Brand exhorts us to work to discern the will of God, something we can do in many great and small ways. But first we hear a report on Pope Benedict's Sunday Angelus and his address to the faithful gathered to pray with him in Castel Gandolfo.
Pope Benedict made an appeal to the leaders of the G8 nations that they put the needs of the weakest and poorest populations at the center of their deliberations, saying that the vulnerability of the poor has grown today because of speculation and financial turbulence and their adverse effects on the prices of food and energy. The leaders of the seven most industrialized nations and Russia are meeting beginning Monday in Japan.
Mi rivolgo quindi ai partecipanti all'incontro di Hokkaido Toyako affinché al centro delle loro deliberazioni.
The Holy Father says he hopes that generosity and longer-range vision aid them in making decisions aimed at relaunching an equitable process of integral development while safeguarding human dignity. Pope Benedict also pointed out that many voices have been raised asking the G8 leaders to realize the commitments made at previous summits and to courageously adopt all necessary measures to conquer the plagues of extreme poverty, hunger, disease, and illiteracy, which still strike such a great proportion of humanity. He noted that Catholic bishops in G8 countries were among those appealing to the summit leaders and said he united his voice to this pressing appeal for solidarity. The Pope was speaking after reciting the Angelus in the papal summer residence in the town of Castel Gandolfo, located in the hills outside of Rome. Before leading pilgrims in the Marian prayer, he asked the entire church to participate spiritually in his trip to Australia for World Youth Day.
Il mio pensiero va poi già all'Australia.
He leaves for Australia on Saturday. He said the event promises to be a new Pentecost and that it would lead young Catholics to take courageous initiatives in spreading the message of Jesus in all cultures. Pope Benedict also greeted with affection the dozens of children from the Sung Ching Ling Foundation of Italy. The foundation is an NGO founded in 1982 and dedicated to the Christian wife of Sun Yat-sen, the father of the Chinese Republic. The foundation works for the education and health of Chinese children.
I bambini rappresentano il futuro della famiglia umana.
The Pope told them that love, harmony, and solidarity are the values that they want to promote in China and in other countries of the world. He said art and culture can unite peoples and that children represent the future of the human family and are thus called to construct a more beautiful and more human world.
In China, in el mundo, ni men ho.
Including a greeting in Chinese, Pope Benedict took the opportunity to send a wish for peace and joy to all the young people in China and throughout the world. I'm Charles Collins.
My friend, the Abbot Timothy Wright, was back in Rome after one of the many travels he undertakes to promote Christian-Muslim dialogue and peace. He had just been to Tanzania in Eastern Africa, so I popped in to see him where he lives here in Rome at the Pontifical Beda College. During our conversation, he showed me a book he had been given during his stay in Dar es Salaam. Dogodogo, the name of the book, looks something like a book for children, with its appealing, colourful illustrations and large text. In actual fact, I found out it's much more than that, even although children is what it's all about. Actually, to be more precise, It's about Tanzanian street children who get a chance to tell their stories, illustrate them, and create a valuable teaching tool for their peers in Tanzania and abroad. I asked Father Timothy to tell me about the author. He did more than that. He gave me her telephone number and suggested I speak to her personally.
My name is Kasia Parham, and I'm living in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. Part of my time, I'm the wife of the British High Commissioner. I'm also a teacher at the International School of Tanganyika. But my heart really lies in the work that I've been doing at the Dogo Dogo Center for Street Children.
As I mentioned, Dogo Dogo is the name of the book, but above all, it's the name of the center, which provides a haven for boys rescued from the street in Dar es Salaam, which is where the book stemmed from. Kasia, I said, tell me more.
Dogo Dogo actually means little by little. That's the Kiswahili word. And the center was founded by an American Maryknoll sister called Sister Jean Pruitt. She began with a drop-in center for boys who she just met on the street and realized that they were in desperate need of love and care and basic rights such as, you know, enough to eat and clothes and a roof over their heads. So she opened a drop-in center in the middle of Dar es Salaam, and really the project grew from there. The word went round, more and more boys were knocking on her door, and she realized that she didn't have enough room at the drop-in center, so she opened another home not far away in Kigogo, where the boys could actually settle down and follow some kind of routine. So whereas at the drop-in center, you know, they can come and go pretty much as they want, whilst they're making that adjustment from life on the street to following a proper routine. But at Kigogo, there's much more structure. It's run more like a family, and they really have to settle down and have a proper bedtime, proper meal times, and commit to life not on the street, but more a normal life, really, with school and chores and the things that a lot of other children take for granted.
How many children does the centre host?
At the moment, there are about 40 in the drop-in centre and another 60 who've now moved on to the Kigogo home. And there is also a vocational training centre out at Bunju where there are another 40 young men. The primary school graduates who come out of Kigogo have the option to go on to vocational training if they want to. Sister Jean encourages them to, because then there's a good chance that they'll get a good trade and make a decent living. But many of the boys really want to go to secondary school. So she's now set up a safe house for them in town where they can stay and they're supervised and they can attend local secondary schools in Dar es Salaam if they do well enough in their exams.
Is the problem of street children in Tanzania a vast problem?
It really is a problem. And in fact, it's a problem that is only just beginning to be talked about. And that's one of the lovely things that's actually come out of the book, is that it's encouraged local people to talk about this and to really to face up to it, because in the past it was a bit of an embarrassment, you know, something to be swept under the carpet. The government does have, I know, hearts and minds are there, but because their resources are so stretched, you know, there are so many areas which need funding, health and education, that it's difficult for money to reach, you know, right the way down to the very, very bottom. And these children who live on the street, you know, they really are the poorest of the poor.
It's a problem that is born from poverty, I would assume, not from any other social unease.
Yes, poverty, and also something that comes out very strongly in the book is that the children themselves realize that they're best chance in life is to get to go to school. And many of them are stuck in the middle of the countryside, often not with their parents because their parents have died. They're looked after by grandparents or by aunts and uncles who use them as child labor. They're not allowed to go to school. They have to stay at home and look after the animals, you know, help to scratch some kind of a living from the soil. And they watch the other children going to school, and they know that that's what they need to do. And very, very often that's the reason why they run away.
This comes across very clearly in the book, in the Dogo Dogo book. All the children describe their stories, and they all say, I want to go to school. And when they do go to school, they say, the classes are fun, it's easy, I like going to school, I want to go to secondary school. Will you talk to me a little bit about the book?
The book just happened. It was extraordinary. I didn't set out to write a book at all. I was helping the Standard 7, that's the final year of primary school. I was helping those boys with their English, because in Tanzania, primary education is all in Kiswahili. But when they go on to secondary, they have to make a switch overnight into English. And all of secondary school is taught in English, and all the exams are in English. So it's a big step for them to make that transition. So I'd been teaching regularly and, of course, enjoying it very much. If you ever come to Dar es Salaam and you come to the Kigogo home, you'll realize that once you go there, it's very, very difficult to disengage. I'm sort of committed for life, I think, now. But anyway, these English lessons, one day we were learning the past tense, the past simple, and the easiest, most fun way for the boys to practice use of the past tense was to tell me things that had happened to them in the past. And then gradually it just dawned on me that things they were telling me were incredibly important and really needed to be written down. So that's how the book started. And it just began with Isaac, who told me everything that had happened to him. And then he said, well, really, Mama, you need to talk to Moses. And then Moses said, well, there's Edward. He needs to tell you a thing or two. And the whole thing just grew from there on its own. All I did really was just write down everything that the boys told me.
The stories are simple and they all have to do with love and with loss. The trials the children describe are incredibly cruel as they speak of their escape from violence and abuse and of their quest for a better life. You were saying that the stories the boys were telling you were stories that were very important, that had to be told, and they found a place in the book. Now, who does the book go to? How are you diffusing this wealth of important information? Yeah.
That's such an important part of the whole project. I think, to begin with, I was hoping that these boys would just be given a voice. That's what they needed, a voice. Because so few people, so few adults really had ever listened to them. But then I realized that they had something important to say to young people in the developed world. In England, in the UK, school-age children who possibly relate best to stories told by children themselves. And I actually used the book to create a series of lesson plans for my grade 10 students at the international school. And it was very exciting because it was clear very quickly that they were absolutely fascinated by this book. And even quite demotivated teenagers, I found really interested and wanting to know more and learning a lot. So Macmillan UK are actually going to reprint the book in the UK for UK schools. And with the help of various friends and contacts, I've managed to get quite a lot of interest from schools in the UK. So what I hope is that when it's reprinted in May, there'll be a lot of interest, especially on the citizenship curriculum, and also actually as a text for the students with English as an additional language. You probably notice that the prose is quite simple and quite direct. So for teenagers who find English difficult, it's actually very accessible. So the content is age appropriate, but the language is easy enough for EAL students access.
And what about the boys, the protagonists of the books themselves, Isaac, Emmanuel? What reaction did they have when they saw the book and their own stories?
They were absolutely over the moon, and they loved being presented to Mama Kikwete, the wife of the Tanzanian president, who came to launch the book jointly with Cherie Blair. So it was all very exciting for them. And actually, at the book launch, we were able to announce that USAID have put up the funding for a Kiswahili translation so that schools and communities in Tanzania will all be able to have copies in their own language. For me, this is doubly important because not only is it a lovely text for school children to read in Kiswahili in Tanzanian schools, it's also a good vehicle for families and communities to talk about this issue of street children. Because I think that when families can talk about problems and issues like this, sometimes they can actually avert the problem before it happens. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of an excellent way for people to discuss and to come up with solutions, as long as they have something to talk about, some reason to be open and to get over the taboo.
Yes, as Kasia mentions, Cherie Blair, the wife of the former British Prime Minister, was in Dar es Salaam and visited the Dogo Dogo Centre. She also wrote the preface to the book, and this is how she describes the dedication of Sister Jean Pruitt.
Faced with so much poverty and so many needing help, it would be easy to despair, but Sister Jean is a remarkable woman. Her dedication reminds me of the old story of the woman putting back into the sea some of the many starfish stranded as the tide turned. A young man, watching, tells her that she is wasting her time, that there are too many beached starfish, and it doesn't matter what she does. Returning another starfish to the water, she replies simply, "It matters to this one."
At the end of a book, there is a little blurb that says that we can all help the boys in the book and others like them. How can we do that?
Yes, I think to be aware and to be sympathetic is a step, certainly. I think the example that has been set by Sister Jean and all the people who work with her, who they show how important it is to love and nurture and encourage the next generation, because children are our future, and if we don't look after them and love them, there's no hope. So what I'm really hoping is that people will read the book and follow the example of these grown-ups who show this tremendous concern for the next generation. I hope also that they'll be inspired by the courage and the tenacity of the boys. I mean, I certainly am inspired by them, and it gives me a huge boost. Whenever things are difficult for me, I just think of how they kept going. On a practical level, of course, Sister Jean is always desperate for money. I can't put it any other way. In the past, she had a lot of help from several governments in the developed world, but of course now many of them give to the Tanzanian government direct in the form of general budget support. They don't support individual, small, specific NGOs like Dogo Dogo. So Sister Jean spends a lot of time going round to various funds, putting forward proposals and collecting money here and there. And there is actually a website for the centre on the back of the book for individuals who would like to make a donation. It's possible for them to do that through the website.
The address of the website is very simple. It's www.dogodogocenter.org. And in a brief afterword, at the back of the book, Kasha Parham points out that the stories in the book are a testament to the courage, resilience and lack of self-pity that characterise the boys at Dogodogo. But, she says, it's also a precious social document, and will, she hopes, provoke a practical response from its readers so that stories like these are no longer commonplace. And now our friend Father Jim explains that each and every one of us can and must work to discern the will of God, something we can do in many great and small ways.
Hello, it's Father Jim. God planted a garden in Eden in the east, and there he put us to care for it. Gardening is one of my great hobbies. Spend a lot of time on my knees. Do all the plants at the college in Rome from seeds and cuttings. I love to touch my Mother Earth. There's a beautiful song, chapter 5 of the prophecy of Isaiah, about Israel being a vineyard. Let me sing to my friend the song of his love for his vineyard. My friend had a vineyard on a fertile hillside. He dug the soil, cleared it of stones, and planted choice vines in it. And in the middle he built a tower. He dug a press there too, but he expected it to yield grapes, but sour grapes were all that it gave. So I ask you to judge between my vineyard and me. What could I have done for my vineyard that I haven't done? I expected it to yield grapes. Why did it yield sour grapes instead? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do to my vineyard. I'll take away its hedge for it to be grazed on, and knock down its wall for it to be trampled on. I'll lay it waste, unpruned, undug, overgrown by the brown, the thorn. I will command the clouds to rain no rain on it. How disappointing for a gardener, when we do all we can. Now Israel is littered with stones, and to make it fertile it's taken centuries. First of all, picking up the stones, then trying to water it, and then give it nourishment, and then planting. By the way, a vine needs good pruning, otherwise it will kill itself if it tried to bud on all its shoots. And our Lord said, if he's the vine and we're the branches, we need pruning, not to hurt us, but to produce more fruit. We've got roses in the garden. It's kind to a rose to prune it so that it doesn't exhaust itself. And we're all so gifted, we couldn't possibly flourish on all our gifts. One lifetime wouldn't be enough. In fact, if I didn't believe in something better, I'd like to believe in reincarnation. I'd love to come back for more. Be somebody else, do something else, fall in love deeper, learn more, visit other places. Because one lifetime isn't really enough, it seems, for life to the full. So before any politician went green, God is green. He planted a garden and there he asked us to look after it. And when you think of the violent history this earth has had, it's geology and astronomy are one of my hobbies. And when you think in the 4,500,000 years, the history of the earth, oh, it had been crushed and remoulded so many times. And it's taken all those millions of years for the earth to put down her larder of oil. The sad thing is that the brothers and sisters of the earth, some have got there before the others and are raiding the larder. And eventually, many of Mother Earth's resources will be used up. And many of our brothers and sisters won't even know that there was a larder. You think how precarious Mother Earth is. I believe the rivers are now in danger from pollution and other things. Some people travel miles and talk about global warming. From the very beginning, we have to remember that Mother Earth is the mother of all the living. And we need to share Mother's larder. Otherwise, we'd be in great trouble with the Lord, who gave us this earth for all to care for it. One of the rules of gardening is you only get out of Mother Earth what you put into it. So there is a theology of compost still to be written. That all our bits and pieces, instead of just being wasted, somehow need to be turned back to refresh Mother Earth. That poor thing can be exhausted just because some greedy people got there first. Ezekiel was talking about this. When people arrived at an oasis, first there, first served, they were all butting each other out with their rumps, muddying the waters for those who come after them. The whole earth is a commonwealth. Let's be careful not to squander the wealth, but to make sure that what wealth there is common. Amen.
That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.